This is Covered Calls with Kevin Simpson, featuring expert insights and analysis from the industry's top investment professionals. If you'd like a deeper understanding of today's markets, this is the show for you.
Welcome everyone to At Covered Calls, my podcast. I'm Kevin Simpson. For those of you who are tuning in for the first time, I'm the CIO of Capital Wealth Planning in Naples, Florida. My goal here is to engage with the best and brightest minds on Wall Street. And today I am very excited to have my good friend Bryn Talkington on. Most of you will recognize Bryn from her CNBC hits that you can catch her several times a day, seemingly. She is also the managing director of Requisite Capital Management in her day job and just an incredible person. So thank you so much for coming on the show today, Bryn.
Oh, Kevin, I'm so excited. We get to actually talk about Covered Calls together, right?
For the first time. Well, you know, you're my favorite guest on Halftime, my favorite committee member, because rarely will you put out a trade without a complimentary covered call. Complimentary trade, which I just love. So you can imagine that I sit here and watch you on TV cheer, and every time you say the word covered calls.
We're a small group. We've got to stick together though and educate clients about the benefits of how selling calls can really, you know, improve the outcome of portfolios.
Yeah, and help also mitigate a little of the volatility, because we get reminded in years like this that stocks don't always go straight up. Sometimes they actually can go down for a little bit, and it's a wonderful means of not only generating cash flow, but also muting volatility.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think this year, if investors didn't know about selling calls, I know just from a lot of people I talk to, they've really educated themselves. I mean, you wrote a really great book that I think is important, that makes it so simple for investors to understand. Because I do think, you know, in 2017, what I remember is we did almost no call writing in 2017. And when I look back, I saw the peak to trough decline in 2017. So at any point in time, the highest to low in the S&P was under 4%. So you just had this slow upward grind on an escalator, moving higher. And there was no volatility to really sell calls against, versus this year. The volatility, especially on a lot of the NASDAQ stocks, are so huge. And so you can take advantage of that and get some premium while you're sitting through this bear market.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see what the chart of the VIX looked like on 2017, you know, so low. And even this year, it's a little bit more muted than you would expect for the type of correction that we've seen. The exception being, to your point, some of the more actively traded NASDAQ stocks. But my theory behind it, I'll try to keep it really brief because not many people care, is that this correction is so expected by institutions. You know, the Fed is basically put up the game plan, the playbook. So the hedging that was sometimes required in previous declines wasn't necessary this year because the institutional marketplace was just a little better positioned. So you compare it to like the COVID crash or the dot-com crash in 2000, or even certainly the financial crisis, where markets get caught off guard. That's when you see the VIX spike into the very, very high levels and premiums really escalate. This year, it's been a bad market, like a lousy, lousy market for both stocks and bonds. But generally speaking, the VIX has still been relatively static, even though much higher than 2017.
Right. I mean, I think that what surprised a lot of people, it didn't surprise us, but what surprised a lot of people is the bond market. And that's where you have seen a tremendous amount of volatility. And so a lot of times I think stocks have been the easier thing to sell, because the bond market is multitudes bigger than the stock market. And there's also a lot of leverage on the bond market as well, with, you know, risk parity trades, et cetera. And so I think that bond market volatility has been so amplified, that's helped a little bit of stocks to have, I agree with you, less volatility from a 40 or a 50 level than we would have thought we would have been witnessing.
It's interesting you said that, because I think a lot of people forget the disparity in size between fixed income markets and stock markets. Stock markets are, equities are peanuts compared to the global fixed income market. So I think we have the easier job sometimes, especially in years like this when you've got rising rates and you're caught on the wrong end of duration, you can't find any yield. It stinks for clients though. Like, so many of the financial advisors that we work with will have retail clients in a 60-40 portfolio, which has worked for so long, and I'm sure will again in the future. But when you get a year like this, it can just be incredibly painful because you've got both equities and bonds kind of under a little bit more pressure than you're accustomed to. How do you guys address that?
Well, so I always think some part of our business, most parts of our business are really tough. You can't predict equity returns. You have to just look at history and see where you are on the cycle. But to me, bonds have always just been a very simple math equation. And so, you know, we have had in our client portfolios for around 3 years, 100% of that exposure in ultra short bonds.
Awesome.
And so with a duration between a quarter and a half a year. Well, it's awesome this year because that portfolio is flat to down like 5 or 10 basis points. But the cost of that are the previous 3 years. A lot of our clients, when you look at that line item of ultra short, are asking, why am I not getting any return, you know, off of this? And so I think it's important just to remember when we would walk through that math equation that, for example, the 10-year treasury, you know, going into this year had a duration of 9 and let's say a yield of what, 150?
Yeah, so, 1.51.
Right. So with just like simple math for the viewers, duration, if you have a 1% increase in rates and you have a duration of 9, you're going to be down 9 plus your yield. So down like 7.5%. So we knew that when the Fed said they were going to tighten, we had no idea they were going to tighten this far. But we just knew that math equation was not a risk that was compensated. So we've just been sitting in ultra short, you know, since 2018. Maybe at the end of the year, we have the ability to revisit that.
Yeah, well, there's a little bit yield out there now that you haven't seen for quite some time. And I think about that conversation about duration, and you knew the train was coming. You could see the light in the tunnel. You just didn't know how quickly it was going to hit you. But the Fed clearly has turned up the gas on rate hikes, and looks like they're not quite finished just yet. So we've got maybe into the end of the year a little bit higher yield. But to your point, reallocating that I think makes a lot of sense after a 3-year zero is the good is the good print for 2022 if you're a fixed income investor.
Definitely.
All right, so let's talk about something a lot more important, non-stock market related. As a lifelong Philadelphia fan, Phillies fan, passionate Phillies fan, I have to congratulate you on your Astros. The best team in baseball, and kudos to you and the folks in Houston.
Oh, that was so, well, sorry about that. You're a Philly fan. I mean, no offense to, sorry that you lost, but it just seemed like the ingredients. Anyway, it was a great win. It's always great when your city wins a World Series or a Super Bowl or basketball. It's just fun. The city all came out. Schools were closed on the Monday after. There was a big parade. Just always just such good energy for the city, especially Houston, to have that kind of victory. So go Astros.
Well, considering the season the Phillies had to start the year, to make the playoffs was a, you know, pleasant surprise. And then to make the run that they did, it was just a, you know, couple bad breaks in the series. And who knows, maybe it could have gone in a different direction. But incredible baseball for the past few months. So lots and lots of fun. For, I live in Florida, but I still root for the Phillies.
That's great. All good. All good stuff.
All right. So I would like to hear from you as far as the covered call genesis of what got you interested in options in the first place, because you and I are so common in our thinking. It's a joy to hear you talk about covered calls every day. But I've never asked you where this began, how this interest in options was formulated. So if you can tell us your story, I'd love to hear it.
Sure. Well, I mean, to kind of hit the punchline, you know, my partner Doug and one of our senior analysts on the team, Ryan, you know, they've been doing covered calls for 2 decades. And we have some clients that we actually do some pretty, have done in the past, some pretty sophisticated option trades. And when we started Requisite back in 2017, as I said earlier, there was no volatility in the market. So we really didn't have much of a covered call overlay on our portfolios. But we always knew that when we would have a new client come in with individual names that we could sell calls against, we just knew it was such a simple way to be able to add incremental return on companies that you already want to own. That being said, you have to be willing to get rid of that company if the market, you know, does what it did in like April and May of 2020 and just rips higher. So we really try to be very pragmatic about investing. We don't fall in love with stocks. We fall in love with strategies. And so right now, we really love the strategies of covered calls. And so what we had been doing is we were doing our own portfolios of individual names and then selling calls against them. But as you know, in client portfolios, those call positions will all be in the red for the most part, right? And it doesn't look good. And so we were spending a lot of time just walking through how that works, just visually. And so I think, you know, your strategy, you know, Devo's great. When there are strategies that can actually bring those together in an ETF, it just creates a much better client experience. And so when what we did a couple of years ago is really start outsourcing more to that, to, you know, strategies that are doing it inside of, you know, an ETF, that makes it a lot better experience for the client.
Well, we're certainly happy for any plug on Devo. We launched maybe 2-3 weeks ago an international version. The symbol is IDVO. And we took just ADRs, so everything's US listed, and we're using US stock options. But we're not having a separately managed account that we're tracking. So it gives us the freedom to make it very, very cash flow intensive. Super high dividends, lots and lots of option premiums. I'm not sure how I feel about international investing versus US. I'm more of a US person, but there's a demand out there, a strong demand for more covered call strategies. So we did roll out iDevo, and so far it's starting to get a little traction. It takes a long time for these things to mature enough to get really good liquidity, in my opinion, but just another neat attribute for the international space with respect to a more of a buy right than anything else.
Well, right, because if you think about it, I mean, we're not big fans of international and of developed or emerging markets, but that's as an asset allocation, most people have a piece of that in their portfolio, and you already have within international low valuations, really good dividend yields, and so if you can put a strategy to sell calls and amplify that even more, you know, that's something that I haven't seen in the marketplace. So I'll be curious to watch the trajectory of that ETF.
Yeah, I'll send you a tear sheet. The shameless plug for me, iDevo and Devo. So as far as another interesting story I want to share about Bryn, she was in New York doing something for CNBC on the set. And I remember watching you that day. And I talked to you afterwards because you were talking about a covered call trade that I really liked. And he said, well, I had to rush the phone conversation because I'm going to dinner. And I said, oh, that sounds like fun. Who are you having dinner with? And you're like, oh, President Bush. And I thought, that's pretty amazing. And then he said something even funnier, like, well, we all live in Texas, but we had to come to New York to get together for dinner. So is that a regular dinner partner of yours?
I wish. No. And there were about 400 other people, the 400 people at that dinner as well. But it's always such a treat when I'm up in New York and then to be able to go and listen to 43 speak. He's funny, he's clever. And so that was funny. It definitely was not like five of us sitting there eating dinner with 43. It was a big group, but still fantastic event.
Any funny behind the scenes CNBC stories, bloopers, something you can share clean, respectful, and won't get you fired or thrown off?
I mean, I feel like the bloopers are live, right? Because that's live TV for an hour. So everyone sees my bloopers, right? So that's one of the great things about the show is it is live. And, you know, once again, I make bloopers all the time. And so I try to correct them when I say them, but I just think it's a really fun experience to be able to, you know, share for an hour or share for a hit, like on Scott's overtime, just like our lens on the market. And, you know, we do allocate capital. So I think that there's some people that talk about money and then there's people that run money. And so we run money. And as an asset allocator, that's why I try to give ideas on what other investors watching can do. Because I think we can only spend so much talking about the Fed or interest rates or et cetera, et cetera. People want actionable ideas. And so that's, to me, has been really fun to be able to share those ideas, the good ones and the bad ones, but share those ideas that investors can hopefully take and put in and think about putting in their portfolio.
Well, you do an amazing job. We all love watching you. We all think that you're the best. And I thank you for coming on the show today. We may want to get back to CNBC so we can learn more about Twitter and FTX.
Oh, exactly. I don't know about that.
I think it's an incredible story, and I'm sure a sad, tragic one that we'll learn more about as the days, weeks, months, and years go on.
Right. I mean, never underestimate the depravity of man. Right.
Well, the one lesson we were talking about this morning with my team was the importance and the power of custody. So if there is a lesson here, it's that in advisors that we work with and their clients at least know that the custody is safe, that they're in regulated stock. You know, the stock exchanges are, sometimes we complain about compliance and overregulation, but boy, it's important. Stocks go up and down. Sometimes they can go down a lot, but knowing that, that your money's there and that it's safe and that it's regulated, I think is the best part about our financial system, our stock market, and something that we should certainly appreciate on a weekend like we just had.
Yeah, and I think that's why so many people, you know, push their money over to FTX, is they didn't want to be on the regulated, the Coinbases of the world, you know, on the regulated exchanges, because we do have regulation. You can't have an asset class that's operating in the 1920s, and then the rest of the world is operating in 2022, especially as an exchange. So hopefully this will be an impetus for Congress finally to pass something that gets like regulatory framework that no one has a choice, but they have to abide by.
Well, we only invest in really good companies that generate revenue, profits, and dividends. So we stayed away from those high flyers on the way up. We certainly had no exposure on the way down or anything having to do with crypto or these exchanges. But to your point, when you're investing, it's important to know where my money is. You know, that to me is paramount. And when you want to be in a non-regulated exchange that has its own internal auditors, we learned what happens. And it's not for the first time.
Yeah, hopefully the last time. Right, I'm not holding my breath, but hopefully it's the last time.
Everything seems to recycle, you know, whether it was Enron or FTX or some of these other exchanges that happened before, sort of as a precursor. But again, it's not a world that I live in or know. I'm just following it on the fringes or the peripherals, and you know, crypto gets a lot of attention, and certainly he did as an individual. And what an amazing, seriously tragic story. It seems like we're ending this podcast on a real down note.
We should end it on a positive note then.
We got to turn this
around. Let's talk about some covered calls. What's going on there?
Well, I think we have enjoyed some really good volatility this year, even last week in the big run up that we had to the upside, which is super pleasant. But to me, I don't think that we're out of the woods. Like, there's an all clear signal. I still think that markets will trend in a more normal direction after this super cycle of 19, 20, and 21. So if that thesis holds true and we look out over the next 3 to 5 years instead of the next 3 to 5 months, and we get more range-bound markets, maybe they're up 8 or 9%, maybe they're down 8 or 9%. Think about the power of what we can do compounding on top of it, not just dividends, but also covered call premium. So I think that the past 10 years have been really great. You could invest in anything and it would work. This is not that time any longer. So being really looking at things that are very safe, secure, and going back to the mathematics of the power of compounding with covered calls, I think for you and I, the next 3 to 5 years is just wind at our back, and I couldn't be more excited.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I think it's going to be a great environment. I think you also have areas like, you know, industrials, energy, especially energy, which had been left for dead. You know, you still have some really good volatility there, and so you get price appreciation, dividends, and volatility. So I still, especially right now when some of the energy names seem to be a bit oversold, being able to sell calls against those right now and get really nice premium to me is a really smart strategy. As I think that energy, which I think is around 5% of the S&P, over the next few years probably could get its way back up to 10%. And so I think that the wind is at its back in sectors like that, but also a sector that you can sell calls against plus those dividends is a really good total return.
I have goosebumps. I love it. Lots and lots of free cash. I was thinking of Devon Energy as you were talking. I mean, you're in Texas. You know these names better than anyone. We've added Schlumberger into the portfolio recently, SLB. We have owned Chevron since forever. And we actually had Marathon called away recently. It was up like 500% since the pandemic lows. We've owned ConocoPhillips very successfully in the past. I mean, as out of favor and as taboo as this sector was, I mean, we just have enjoyed the performance this year. And it's funny, I laugh sometimes. You watch growth managers come on and they start talking about these energy names. And I'm thinking, where have you been the past 3 years? You know, now that it's politically correct to talk about it and you can have share buybacks and distributions to shareholders and dividend increases, it's a great place to be. Must be fun living in Texas.
It is. It's, you know, there's a lot of grit down here. If you're in the energy field down here, you have grit in spades. And so I think it's nice to see that the companies themselves, though, have really found some discipline and are being much more shareholder friendly. And I think that whole ESG rhetoric, people are really starting to understand what that actually means, and that the energy complex definitely has a spot there in investors' portfolios.
Well, it's been one of the best performers this year, so we're thrilled. We're going to keep writing calls against it and generating lots of free cash flow for our clients. Bryn Talkington, thank you so much for coming on today. You're the best. We love you. Big fans, and can't wait to watch you on television tomorrow.
Back at you, Kevin.
This message does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to purchase securities through CWP Advisory Services. Investments are not guaranteed and involves risk of loss. The views and opinions expressed in this message are those of investment professionals made at the time this content was recorded, are not necessarily the views and opinions of CWP, and may change in time without notification. For additional information about CWP, visit CWP's or the SEC's website for a copy of our ADV disclosure brochure and Form CRS.